Welcome to episode 4 of Banking Blueprints. For this episode, we are doing things a bit differently. Today, we will cover part 1 of the conversation between our host, Dharmesh Mistry, and our guest, Leda Gileptis, an icon of the banking industry and the author of Bankers Like Us. In today's episode, Dharmesh and Leda dive into how to navigate the ever-evolving world of finance, how to tackle the hurdles of legacy systems, and finally, the limitless possibilities of neo-core solutions in banking modernization. Enjoy part 1, and we will soon be back with part 2.
Welcome, everybody, to Innovation Beyond the Core. And this week is my special friend, Leda Gileptis. Hello, Leda.
So good to be here with you today, Darren. Thank you for having me.
Good. And so, I mean, look, let's, for the benefit of the two people in the world that don't know you, Leda, can you give us tell us a bit about yourself and your experience in banking?
Absolutely. Hello to new friends out there who don't already know me. I've described myself as a recovering banker for a long time, partly because I fell into it entirely by accident and I found my calling in a way that embarrasses me to this day. And partly because even though I have been outside traditional banking for the last few years, working in the core banking space, sort of on the technology vendor side, I still say we and mean bankers. I even wrote a book called Bankers Like Us, accepting that the way my brain works is still very much that of a banker rather than a service provider. I think it's fair to say, and it will touch on some of the things we talk about today, that I came into banking at the worst and best time possible. I actually got my first banking job in 2007, just as the financial crisis was picking up immense speed, and I have only known the industry in a time of crisis. I have only known it in a time of stress, anxiety, and profound change, both positive change, like the fintech wave was picking up speed at the same time, and frustrating change through challenges, regulatory, and market pressures. And it has been an amazing time to be doing technology work in banking. So although at the time it felt like the most counterintuitive decision anyone could ever make, it has been an amazing journey since then. Having come from a sort of public policy and defense background, falling into an industry that was about to set on a transformation journey that actually isn't anywhere near finished. So I've held some traditional tech transformation operation roles inside banks, and then moved to client-facing technology and innovation, as we called it at the time. And the last few years, I've worked in core banking, which has solidified our friendship, Darm, because on top of everything else, we can geek out together.
I mean, look, firstly, you make me feel really old because you came into banking when I've been there like 20 years.
It wasn't my first job, though. It should make you feel old if it was like I finished high school and entered banking. It wasn't that at all. I did work in defense, and I did some technology and M&A work in defense, which was mind blowing for all the wrong reasons. And it definitely makes me feel old when the thing that is my second career I've been doing for 20 years.
Right. Wow. So,
see, not so old now.
Okay, so can you say a little bit about your experience in the core banking space itself? You know, because you work with those,
I would say, my
modern core vendors, right?
Yes. So I would say my experience in core banking is a story in three parts.
Right.
The first part is a tale of frustration, because I spent the first 15 years of my career inside banks. And as you know very well, because you've had the same journey, anything you want to do inside a bank, particularly if you're trying to implement any data first initiatives, no matter how big or small, very, very quickly you will come up against someone senior in either compliance or IT who will suck their teeth and go, core can't do that. And that's the end of the conversation, right? Because core replacement, core transformation has been such a specter of career limiting choices for senior decision makers over the years, because historically changing the core has been expensive, has been long drawn out, and it has been career ending for the CTO that signed off on it. So I spent so much of my career having to work around the limitations of the core. And it was an extremely frustrating place to be inside banks, where you always had to clip the wings of the ambition of the organization to fit it in the box of our legacy technology, whichever shape that might have been. So the first phase was one of frustration. So you can imagine that when I got the call to come back to Europe, because I was living in the Middle East at the time, to work in that joint venture between 11FS and DNB, the biggest bank in the Nordics, to build from scratch, blank sheet of paper, a neocore. I had a million questions in my head about whether that was the best way to go about it and whether that was the best thing for me. But the loudest voice was, blank sheet of paper, go. And I have not looked back, to be fair. I spent two very happy years at working with DNB and Foundry. And then as things started shifting with the beginning of COVID, I moved to 10X and got to really scratch that itch of seeing customers go live under sort of my watch and my care. So the next phase two, is 5 years of building and seeing clients live onto neocores with all the challenges and joy that comes with that. And phase number three started recently when I left 10X to go independent. And now you have all the scars of both sides of the fence, and you can, because you're not picking a side anymore, I guess, is the reality. You look at the landscape very differently. Still very, very close to my heart. That was a very long answer to a very short question.
No, but it's a good answer. And I mean, you know, just on that blank sheet of paper, because I find that a bit fascinating, is that, you know, on when you're in a bank, you kind of think, if we could just start again, you know, and have this blank sheet of paper. But when you've got it, it's quite a daunting kind of task to take on, isn't it?
It is. It is quite daunting. And the reality is that, particularly if you've got the scars of having been frustrated and limited in the past, there are a couple of things that you come in and you're really opinionated about. You're really strongly, because you know the reasons why the other thing didn't work. So remember, we all went in and was like, okay, we know what we want our data architecture to look like. We know what the sort of messaging and event streaming ethos of this thing needs to be. And we also know that in order to prevent ourselves from becoming a monolith, or as one of my clients named it, a modulith, down there, a modulith, what a good word, right? We knew that we had to create this sort of asset agnostic architecture where the ledger didn't care if you were dealing in securities, FX, chickens. And we created this sort of trigger-oriented architecture. Great. But then you come across a whole host of choices that become extremely important that you don't have lived experience on. And there's more of those than the others, actually.
Right.
And sometimes you default to going, you know what? Not everything about the way we've always done things is wrong. Yeah. And that's a big mistake that actually a lot of us make when we're building something new. You try to move away from the old ways of working in everything. But actually, why? Quite a lot of it works. That's why it's still where it is. And then there's a whole host of things where you're like, you know what? I don't have a view on that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't care. So you have to go out there and do quite a lot of research and find that the market doesn't care as long as it works. And that's where some risk enters the equation. And you make some good choices and you make some terrible ones. And sometimes the terrible ones you can fix and sometimes you have to live with them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer of this thing where, you know, not everything needs to be scratch, you know, otherwise, you know,
yes,
I'd be redundant by now. But as not being a young man anymore. But anyway, so what's your experience? I mean, like when it comes to the implementation side, right? What's your experience of like core replacement projects? How much fun were they?
It As they happened, not at all.
Not fun, all right.
As they happened, not fun at all, to be honest with you. Which was a very disappointing realization to make. I think particularly as the core replacement project that I've worked on were either under duress, so inside the bank, something had gone terribly wrong and we needed to migrate some functionality at least onto a new infrastructure. And the fact that it was under duress meant that the kind of scrutiny we all had on that work was anxiety-laced. And then the go-lives I've had on the Neo side, there's a lot riding on them because they're early for the market, they're early for you. So every little thing is, again, anxiety-laced. So I wouldn't call them fun. But I would say that the journey of implementing a change like that is so rarely, or rather, the vast majority of the things that you're worried about and working with and dealing with have nothing to do with the core itself. And it's all about the organization, the politics, the business priorities, the estate you're integrating into, the stakeholders that need to be kept informed and comfortable. And depending what situation you're looking at, that could be a regulator, which is never a set of comfortable conversations, right? Or it could be a board, or it could be just business stakeholders. So it's never fun, as it turns out. As it turns out, it was a lot of things. Fun wasn't one of them.
Right. And that's like your, is that perspective both from working within the bank and also working for a supplier of a core, is that it's never fun to do these implementations?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's not fun. It's brilliant, and once it goes live, the feeling is amazing. Particularly if it goes live with nothing go wrong, right? The feeling is amazing. Although the reality is, you never get that moment of triumph like you see in movies, because chances are, by the time it's gone live, you've moved on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So you don't even have the time to celebrate. But I think it's fair to say that it's creative, it's interesting, it's engaging. You do get an amazing sense of accomplishment. But the stress that goes around it because of everything that rides on it being successful, fun is in short supply.
I mean, in terms of the implementation, how does it vary between, is it easier for a small bank than a big bank? Small banks don't have the resources to do these things, so they're pretty much reliant on a vendor or a partner. Big banks have all of the resources, right, and tons of very smart people. So, is it easier for one and harder for the other, or is it all the same?
So in my experience, the lived experience of doing something this in a very large global bank is its own animal, and doing it in a smaller organization is its own animal. But harder or easier, in my experience so far, and it has been a surprise, had more to do with why they were making the change and what the nature of the change was rather than the size. So for instance, in a very large organization that is launching a new initiative, say, on a new core, and I've had this experience a number of times, some went live and some didn't. The biggest danger when it's something new and it's not something that is already part of the critical infrastructure is that the organization could get distracted. So Though the organization is big and kind of forwarded and there are a lot of other people around, if it's not on fire and it's a nice to have or a business enhancement, it is the biggest danger is the organization getting distracted. Whereas a small organization, for better or worse, will not get distracted. But then I had a project that hasn't gone live, actually, so it's not public, many, many years ago, change of leadership. So they didn't get distracted. They just, midway through a project like that, change of leadership, and old steam leaves the engine, wind leaves your sails. So that is a danger you have in any big organization if you're doing something new. If you're replacing a piece of critical infrastructure that is already live and running and you have a migration from existing business in an existing geography, then that is not a danger. And then the realities of doing it in a big bank or a small bank are less about size and more about drivers. So I've worked on a couple of projects that were because of a like disaster recovery, failures of a previous system or regulatory pressures. The minute those words are uttered, it doesn't matter what the size of the organization is.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. That's kind of mirrors my experience as well, is that worked on a tier one implementation. It was really important to the bank. That was very clear, right? Because of the problems that they were having and, you know, the position they were in their market, et cetera, yeah. Right? And so, you know, this thing actually did survive three different CEOs, right?
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, in 5 years, I mean, it was, I think some football teams have had fewer managers, right, in that time frame.
Not but, Birmingham City.
Not Chelsea. But anyway. I think that's absolutely spot on. But, you know, for a tier one bank, right, I mean, like typically the smaller banks, tier four, five banks, you know, they tend to go to a vendor that has the spread of functionality. You know, so that, you know, they've got almost one throat to choke as such, right? But for a tier one bank, any one of them has got hundreds of points of integration. Is it realistic that they'll ever replace their core? You know, will it ever happen? Or will they just kind of like build around it and add a new one?
So my general view when it comes to any type of tech infrastructure inside a big organization, and I'll get back to the small organization because I heard a brilliant story recently that you will love. But in a big organization, it's a bit like, you know, you have this broom and it's your grandmother's broom, but you've changed the handle 4 times and you've changed the broom brush 30 times and you've changed the binding and the hand is it still the same broom. And for all intents and purposes, it is still the same broom. And I do think that we need to think of technology infrastructure inside banks exactly like that, because the reality is, there isn't a single year inside an organization of any size that some material technology change doesn't happen.
Right.
But it happens at a pace and in a prioritization schedule that is in line with their risk appetite, their resources, and whatever else is going on. And one of the things I am guilty of, and I think all core banking vendors are guilty of, is because you're so deep in this and you know how important it is, you forget that any decision about what you're going to do with your core is contextualized inside the bank in terms of ambition, other projects, regulatory shift. So you see a lot of heightened activity in regulatory jurisdictions that are about to move into the cloud for the first time. You see a lot of activity then, what the competitors are doing, but also what other projects are in flight, because there are dependencies. You want to risk manage exposure, right? So why am I saying this? I'm saying this because it would be naive to think of it as a binary thing. Although when you're inside the vendor, you often do. They either change their core or they don't. But the reality is they're constantly changing things. And they're changing them in as big a bite as they can take and as small a bite as they can take at the same time. So yeah. Is it realistic that a big bank will change its core in a big bank? No, and it would be stupid. It would be dangerous. And they're not going to do it because they're not stupid. Do I think that the vast majority of banks will have a very different core infrastructure by 2050? Yes. Do I think they will have it by 2027? No. So between now and then, I think it will be a case of deliberate, intentional movement in a particular direction. And by the time you get there, is it still the same broom?
Yeah. This is... Triggers Broom from Only Fools and Horses. I've worked in the organization for 40 years and I've always had the same broom. I've had 6 different handles, but, you know, 4 different brushes.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I love that analogy. That's a great, 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 great story. Okay, so is there one approach, a proven tested approach to replacing core that guarantees success?
That's a $1 million question, right? I mean, the short answer to that is
don't give it away to everyone, because if there is, We're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, actually, there is. And Lita and Dom can tell you what it is, and you have to pay $1 billion. So there isn't, right? Because if there was, people would have worked it out. Because the magic about Core is that it is a utility everyone needs, right? It's not a niche problem that people may choose to deal with. Everyone needs to think about what they do here. I think there are a couple of characteristics that successful transformations have.
Yes.
And ideally, you have all of them. So the first one we already touched on is leadership continuity. It doesn't necessarily need to be the same people.
Yeah.
But it needs to see to be the same business vision. And usually that happens with some continuity in humans as well, to be fair. But you need a clear vision. If it's an experiment to the side, then distraction is likely. If you're only doing it under duress and regulatory pressure, then not going all the way is also likely. So that continuity of business vision and a realization of where you're going as a business helps. The second, which is extremely hard to quantify, but I've seen it as the singularly most significant driver in my career, is someone in the organization whose personal ambition and their personal view of their legacy or their accomplishment or the proof point for the market is tied to this work. Someone's personal life somehow ties to this project. And it's such an obscure thing to be looking for, but essentially that organizational directional ambition and someone's personal ambition need to coexist. And then the last thing I would say that I see in those successful implementations is a properly calibrated risk management language. Because you need to have the hard conversations about risk management, because you're migrating data, you're migrating live customers, you're making the hard decision to switch things off. So you need to have the right language to speak to the risk teams and the compliance teams so that you're agreeing on what is an adequate level of satisfactory stress test before you go, okay, I'm flicking it. I'm flicking the switch. I'm switching it off now. But equally, not shying away from them. One of the biggest things that I have seen as a thing that failed projects have in common is the attempt to keep as much of the work secret as possible.
Yeah.
And not bring the risk compliance main organization eyes onto this work till it's as advanced as possible. I see the urge. I get it. It also comes from years of doing innovation projects like that. So all new technology was usually nurtured like that. It does not work when you're looking to migrate live customers and where you're looking to touch critical infrastructure. So it's a combination of ambition, people feel somehow personally bound to this work, and the properly calibrated risk management from day zero. You keep the risk and compliance folks out of the room long enough, you're dead.
Thank you for tuning into Banking Blueprints. We invite you to stay tuned for future episodes. On behalf of our Season 1 host, Dharmesh Mistry, and the team here at Zafin, we're glad you're here. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.